Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you of the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and tonight the views of Bob Chapman. Hi, Bob. How are you doing? Bob, are you there?
Christmas and resting for New Year's.
All right, fine. Well, I just finished of reading your latest newsletter, and it's fascinating. Why don't you just pick up for about a minute here? I've got to check something electronically, and I'll be right back.
Okay. Well, I think one of the important things here that we've had happen this past week is that M3, which is money supply in total, has been catapulting. And this past week, it was up $35.7 billion to a record $10.184 trillion. Now, this is unbelievable. Wall Street acts like they don't understand it or it didn't happen. And now, over the last 31 weeks, money supply is up $558 billion, or 9.7%. Year on year, it's up 8.5%. Now, adding insult to injury, bank credit is up $26.8 billion last week to a record $7.494 trillion. Money supply and bank credit combined rose $62.5 billion in just 1 week as the Fed prepares for another rate rise in January and the arrival of Helicopter Ben on February the 1st. Now, as you can see, there has been total, unbridled, continual escalation of both money and credit beyond anything that's ever been seen in the United States. And you add to that the excesses in other kinds of lending other than bank. You've got loans and leases up 12.9%, commercial and industrial loans up 15.3%. These are annualized. Real estate loans up 14.4%, and just 51 weeks this year, or 1 year, week shy of the end of the year, $2.899 trillion. It is absolutely and just beyond imagination.
And, of course, this has really never happened at any time, certainly in our history. And what you're really saying is that the money production is out of control. We're headed towards a total collapse of the system, and we'll probably be seeing the influence of hyperinflation before long.
Yes, that's true. And what is terrible, from a professional point of view, you can see that the Fed and the government's fiscal policies are absolutely, deliberately trying to destroy the American economy.
Well, of course, certainly globalization is going to do that. The deficit is going to do it. The massive debt's going to do that. The housing bubble collapsing, the globalization, the increasing energy costs, which are really being orchestrated by our government. I mean, they have done everything they could to drive up the cost of energy. So, you know, it's only a matter of time before this whole house of cards comes tumbling down and we begin to see the American people being impoverished.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, your latest newsletter was fascinating, and there's so many things that are happening. And certainly one of the most interesting things is what's happening to gold, because gold is really a barometer of what's going on in the world, isn't it?
It certainly is and has been for centuries. And we'll be back.
All right, we'll be back in just a few moments here with Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster talking about your future. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly our guest is Bob Chapman, the international forecaster. We're talking about, well, we were going to start maybe talking about really the exciting things that have been happening in gold and silver here over the last 3 months. This is certainly so reminiscent of what happened back in late 1979 and 1980.
Well, it is, only this time it's going to be very, very much different. And the reason for that is that we have credit outstanding now, which is 20 times the money that was loaned back then in the late 70s. I mean, you know, people didn't have credit card debt of over $9,000. They didn't have a mortgage of which they put nothing down and had an option, ARMS, which is adjustable rate mortgage or an interest-only mortgage and so on, all these exotic mortgages. Very few people used those back at that time, which is only 25 years ago. And so, if you add all of that leverage into the system and you have the same or worse basic fundamentals in the financial structure, the damage that's going to be done is going to be far, far worse, because this time there's not going to be a Paul Volcker around to raise interest rates to 21.5%. They can't do that because the economy is so highly leveraged. And the consumer presently is making up about 76% of the economy.
By the consumer, you mean really it's just consumer buying that is creating 76% of the gross domestic product?
Yes, that's correct. And the figure for a long time has been between 69 and 72, but it's even higher now. Because we're producing less in goods and services that are going out of the country. So the situation is dire, and so higher interest rates are suicidal for the economy. And with that in mind, the leverage to the downside is going to be enormous after the inflationary aspects have had their run, which will probably last another year and a half or two, and those aspects should take gold up in somewhere between $3,000 and $5,000 for a figure. I've used 3,500 for some time, and the gains in gold and silver related assets will be unbelievable. It'll put the gains that were made in 1979-80 to shame.
Hold that thought for just a moment, Bob.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Bob Chapman, the international forecaster, and Bob was saying that he really thinks that in the coming years, several years, that gold is going to go up to between $3,000 and $5,000 an ounce. He uses the figure $3,500 an ounce. What do you think is going to happen to silver?
Well, I think silver has an excellent chance to go to $50. It could go to $100. It could go more. It's very hard to tell. The commercials in the COMEX have been working with the United States government, and there's five of them that have short positions which are more than annual production. Now, that's not supposed to happen, but the CFTC allows it to happen at the behest of our government, and our government, of course, does exactly as it pleases. And so, once the market in silver breaks out, the leverage that's involved there is so great that these prices of silver will catapult. For those of you who were involved back in the late 70s, you'll recall that the market was so volatile on its way to $50 that they put limits on each day, and silver could only go up 50 cents or 70 cents or a dollar, depending upon the controls at that time. And we would see 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 days in a row where the market was lock limit up, 50 cents a day. And so, you know, you're looking at $5 and $6 gains in silver before you could trade, because the buy orders were so overwhelming over the sell orders. And you're going to have that happen again. And the inventory in silver has to be very, very small. And the inventory in gold is very, very small. It's my opinion that the central banks are out of the gold that they're willing to sell. Everything else has either been leased or they want to hold what they have. And I don't think they have any left for sale. And if I'm correct, that's why gold is acting the way it is now. And on the flip side of that, while these things are happening, we're going to see a downward slope in the real estate market, which now makes up in toto some 50% of the economy and 70% of the growth. And once that starts down, I think you can expect that the stock market will. And interest rates in general will tend higher. We have a very unique situation that doesn't happen too often in the interest rate markets right now. The U.S. Treasury notes and bills, the 2 years yield is higher than that of the 5 and the 10 year.
That's what they call the inverse ratio, isn't it?
The inverted yield curve.
Right.
And that happened this week. I was just writing about it a few minutes ago. And if it stays there for a while, a month or two or three, you can expect a recession. And we've been predicting that. That's why we've been telling everybody to get out of debt, get those credit cards and revolving credit and the loans on your vehicles out of the way, because one of two of you in the next year, this year coming, the following 2 years will lose your job. And maybe you can keep your house if you don't have all those other bills hanging over your head. And, of course, we have new bankruptcy rules, which change the whole situation on going bankrupt and clearing up. One of the downsides to a lower market is the pension bomb. And pensions right now are underfunded, if you include the federal government, about $1.1 trillion. If the Dow goes down to 7268, that figure will double. And there's no way to pay it, which means, in the final analysis, people will get 10, 20, 30, 40% of the original amount of money that they were supposed to receive in their pensions from their corporations and from the pension plans that they have with towns, cities, counties, state, and federal government, and the diminution of Social Security and a cutback in Medicare and Medicaid. So it's all coming. It's all in place, and I know you don't want to hear it, because I hear this from the public all the time. You want to believe the lies that are coming from Washington, corporate America, Wall Street, our banking system. Well, if you want to, you go right ahead and do that, and it'll cost you very dearly, because one-third of you are going to lose your jobs, and you're going to lose your homes.
But, of course, what you actually commented in this week's forecaster that they've already passed legislation to begin cutting back on student loans and on Medicaid to fund some of the other giveaway programs they have. So, I mean, they're already beginning to cut back on Medicaid, and you know that what they're going to try to do is shift that to the states. But the states are having financial problems. Where are they going to come up with the money? You know, before the federal government got involved in medicine, every county was required to have a county hospital, and nobody went without medical care. Before this debacle is over, I think people are going to be dying from lack of medical care because the government has completely destroyed our health care delivery system, and there's just no way that the local communities will be able to afford, you know, to provide health care for people simply because they're not going to have the income base. It's all been transferred to the state and the federal government, and the federal government will continue spending money, and the state government will continue spending money, and our local communities will go bankrupt.
Well, and this is perpetuated in part by the greed of the medical industry, the doctors and the medical corporations, and in other factors within the system, but them in particular. And I believe what has happened is the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak, came into play probably in the early 90s and then rolled and perpetuated itself. And that was the incidence of illegal aliens into the United States. They have burdened every health system because they don't have any health care. they're paid very, very low wages. They have no benefits, and for the most part, they don't pay taxes, although they have to have Social Security to get a job, and more often than not, they're making up the number. And, of course, there's oodles of money, I can't remember the figure, that the federal government has in a suspense account where the money has come into phony Social Security numbers. But the bottom line is that the system was thrown over the edge by the illegal aliens, which we have been and will continue to pay for. And it's tragic what our Congress and our presidents over those years, which are Clinton, Bush, and Bush, have done such damage to the American economy by not making an effort to keep the illegal aliens out of the country. And it's been deliberate because corporate America wants cheap labor, and they treat them like slaves as well. And you might call it mentally abusive. And yes, they shouldn't be here. It is against the law, and if you went to their country and you did what they're doing, you would be escorted to the border or put in jail, depending upon what country that is. And it's very, very unfair to the American people, and it's what shoved that medical system over the edge. And, you know, the cuts that you just saw were cuts to social services of one form or another, student loans and the medical you mentioned and so on. And all that money is being poured down a rat hole in Iraq and Afghanistan to satisfy the greed for the profit of corporate America and, of course, the people who are in the White House. And, you know, now they're talking about invasions of Syria and Iran and who knows where else, perhaps Venezuela. These lunatics are really gone off the deep end.
Well, I share your concern about the coming invasion of Syria, and there will certainly, I suspect, be an attack of one sort, another on Iran, perhaps just a localized nuclear attack to take out their nuclear facilities there. But be that as it may, certainly anybody who really thinks that the American boys are going to come home from the Middle East has really got to be living in a different world. If you read the president's speech on the 18th of December and you analyze it very carefully, he's telling you our boys are going to stay there indefinitely because we're going to bring democracy to the Middle East, whatever that means. Well, anyway, Bob, you know, certainly right here in the United States, you point out that the housing bubble seems to have burst, and we seem to be on the way down. It's beginning to contract in many places across the country, isn't it?
Well, the New York market, and these are upend on the markets for the most part. The condo market, which, you know, there are not many homes in New York City. The condo market has come down about 15%. We're talking about anything from 5 to 1 million. And in some areas of New York State, New England, Maryland, prices have come down in homes, higher priced homes, from 800 to 1.2, 1.5 million. There are 5 to 15 million depending upon, you know, the area. I think what everybody's waiting to see is California going to hold. Right now, some 65% of loans are exotic in California. You know, the ARMS and the interest only and the option loans and all of the madness which are perpetuated by Sorrell and Greenspan.
And, of course, all of that, of course, has been encouraged people to get into houses they couldn't afford. But why bother if you can get it for nothing down and maybe don't even have to pay anything on the principal for a time, just as long as you pay the interest? And, of course, really what's sort of interesting is apparently they're taking a lot of these mortgages and they're bundling them together and they're selling them to foreigners, their mortgage bonds. What do you think is going to happen to those?
I think foreigners are going to get stuck with them. And the key is California. Once California breaks, it's all over.
And I agree with you, and I think that it's only a matter of time. There's just no way that they can maintain this housing bubble. It has been artificially created by the federal government to maintain the bubble in our economy, but of course it's built upon, it's built on quicksand. We'll be back in just a moment with Bob Chapin from the International Forecaster. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Bob Chapman. We're talking about really what's happening. And certainly as you begin to see the pension funds having more and more problems, as you begin to see the globalization taking our continuing to taking our jobs, as you see foreigners coming in and buying up so many of our businesses, and they really are buying up our businesses, aren't they, Bob?
Well, they surely are. And I just got the end of the year figures for the Fed foreign holdings of Treasury and agency debt. Agency debt is Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, Federal Home Loan Bank, Sallie Mae, certificates and notes and bonds and bills. And they're called custody holdings, a euphemism for foreign central bank holdings. And this year, foreign central banks in those categories purchased $183.3 billion, or 13.7% more this year than the previous year. And that tells you that we are at the mercy of foreigners as far as financing our current account deficit. And that looks like it's going to continue to get worse. And, of course, the question arises, how long can foreign central banks do this? Because and very often what they're doing is they're printing their own currency, converting it into dollars, which is inflationary locally, depending upon that country. And then they're buying dollars, which in turn they buy the agency paper or the U.S. Treasuries. And so we've seen over about 2.25%, 2.5% of inflation in Europe, which had been previously 1.75% to 2%. The biggest buyers recently in the last year have been the United Kingdom, Great Britain, and early in the year it was supposedly hedge funds in the Caribbean banking centers, which in fact is the U.S. Fed surreptitiously buying their own treasury paper. And this past couple of months, a big purchaser has been Mexico. Now, Mexico has about $50 billion in U.S. dollar securities, which is all the money they've got. And I find it interesting that Mr. Fox wants to privatize the oil industry in Mexico. And in order to do this, what he has to do is get Congress to approve that, and that isn't going to happen. And his excuse is, and this is the bottom line on this, is that they need outside financing for oil and gas development for future production. Well, if they need money to do that, why don't they use the $50 billion that they've got?
Well, I think the answer should be pretty self-evident. Mr. Fox is simply an extension of the power elite here in the United States. He was trained in the United States. They got him into power down there, and he's doing their work for them.
Well, fortunately, in July, he will no longer be president, because he can't run again, and presently they say that his possible successor, Mr. Calderon, is high in the polls, and he has been running. He's got signs all over Mexico, and but the other two candidates really have not. Well, the PRI candidate, which is called PRI in Mexico, is about equal standing, and his name is Madrazo.
Well, what's so tragic is the terrible poverty in Mexico, as we'll cover this in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Bob Chapman, and we were simply talking about what's going on in Mexico. And here you have such a tragic situation. Certainly, with the PRI, which was a hardline elitist, really a socialist party, but by socialism I mean where you had a ruling elite and everybody else was impoverished. You did have a small middle class, but not a large middle class, but they were in power for 50 or more years after the communist revolution in the 1930s, but nobody ever really understands what goes on in Mexico. We carry a wonderful book called Oh God Next Door. It goes into how they actually murdered the priests, and they murdered the nuns, and they had them hanging from telephone poles there for weeks at a time. It was a terrible and bloody revolution, really brought about in large part by Masons here in the United States with an intense hatred of the Catholic Church. But anyway, they, for years and years, they ran a very, very tight government there. And more recently, of course, they went into NAFTA, and under NAFTA, which is supposed to be so beneficial to the Mexican people. And what's really happened as far as the Mexican people under NAFTA, Bob?
Well, it really hasn't helped the job picture. All the maquiladoras did along the border was allow foreign companies to assemble goods there. And while assembling them, make more profits for these foreign corporations, which are usually either U.S. or other multinational elitist corporations. And they just made more money. And when it became viable to do business in China, a good part of those maquiladoras lost the business, and now it's in China. So that benefit is in good part gone away. They destroyed the business of 5 million farmers in Mexico, uneducated, many of them with serious medical illnesses, and as a result of that, they said, well, gee, we can't make a living here. We're going to America. So over the border they went, and now we've got them. And the only people who have made out in Mexico are the people at the top end of the ladder. And there's quite a class distinction in Mexico. I've spent a lot of time there. And there's still the ruling elite that's, you know, been there since 1497. And I think that in the next election, the third-party candidate, which is the PRD party, which is Manuel Andres Lopez Obrador, who is a socialist, but a populist, very, very popular, particularly in Mexico City. I think he's going to win. And this is a result of centuries now, over 150 years, of American political, military, and internationalist corporate looting of Central and South America and Mexico. And I think it's kind of like payback time. And, you know, when you've been worked over and mishandled and manhandled that long, you'll go to anybody who'll promise you a change. And that's why this socialist trend is sweeping South and Central America. And it has to be expected, because you just can't suppress people that way forever.
Well, my understanding is that Mexico really does have, you know, a lot of natural resources. It's got a lot of silver there. They, the Congress there, the members, the elected members of the government would like to get back to a silver-backed currency, but of course, the central bankers of the world don't want people to have anything of intrinsic value to exchange. And so what do you think is going to happen as far as this effort to actually use silver, which Mexico has a lot of, to use that as the backing for their currency?
Well, interestingly, there are members of all three parties, and PRD, PRI, PRI, which is Madrazo is running on their ticket. They hold about 62% of the seats this time. I think they'll maintain the same, but PRD will pick up more, and the loser will be PAN, which is the party of Fox and Calderon. And with good reason, they've been nothing but rubber stamps of the United States government, or as I put in articles, gophers or errand boys for Washington. And the Mexicans realize that they're not going to elect them.
What's going to happen to this effort to get silver as a backing for their currency?
I think it stands a good chance, because I think people are realizing, even though the Mexican peso has done quite well over the past few years, it's traded between 10.20 to the dollar and 11.60. It's currently around 10.60 in round figures, and that's pretty good. But the economy's only grown 3.5%, and everybody else's economy is up 6 and 7%. So, you know, in the third world. And so they really haven't done that well.
All right, we're going to be back in just a moment with Bob Chapman. And we'll welcome your calls here if you'd like to call us. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Bob Chapman. We're talking really about what's happening financially to our country or what's happening to the world. And what most people don't understand is there is an elite that really run the finances of the world. They work in concert with the central banks. And there's been a plan, a long-range plan, to impoverish the American people, to lower our standard of living. And what is happening to General Motors? What is happening to Ford? What is happening to Delphi and so many of our other major corporations is not happening by accident. It is happening by intent. And, of course, all you need to do is read the master plan, which is the Earth Charter. And point 10A talks about the equitable distribution of wealth within nations and between nations. Now, do you think that if we had equitable distribution of wealth between Mexico and the United States, that we'd be getting a lot of wealth from Mexico? Of course not. They're talking about equitable distribution of the wealth of the American people. In other words, impoverishing the American people and sending our wealth throughout the world. Would you agree or disagree with that, Bob?
Oh, absolutely. It's just the transference of wealth from American citizens to others.
But you see, the average American can't understand that, and as long as he has a dollar, he thinks it's a dollar. Without understanding, dollar is only a figure. It's what it will buy. And of course, right today, we buy a lot of cheap things out of China, but, you know, one of these days, their price of their goods is going to go up. Maybe it'll be 10 years or more. But as that happens, of course, those goods are going to go up dramatically in cost.
Well, I think it probably will end up the other way around, and that will be that the price of goods eventually won't go up. They'll eventually go down. You know, we'll have another 2 or 3 years of higher prices, but when they go down, you're going to find that the economy, the communist China economy is going to be rent asunder. And the reason why is it's poorly run, it's overextended, and it's very, very financially unsound. And, you know, when America has problems economically, it's certainly going to affect China and all of Southeast Asia and anybody who exports to the United States.
But, of course, and the entire Chinese economy is built upon massive loans and gifts from the United States and the International Monetary Fund, which we control, and the World Bank, which we control, and the Asian Development Bank, which we control, and all of these various agencies and alphabet agencies that we have created, and we're funneling our wealth into communist China, which really doesn't make any sense. But then so much of what's going on today really doesn't make sense. We'll be right back with Bob Chapman. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we have Ed calling from Aptos, but I'm going to ask him to hang on for just a moment, because, Bob, I want you to give out your telephone number. I want you to give out your website so people will know how to get in touch with you.
Well, for those of you who would like a free introductory copy to the International Forecast, you can call toll-free to 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. For those of you who would like to visit my website, that address is theinternationalforecaster.com. The International, FORECASTER.com. For those of you who would like to email me, that address is international_forecaster@yahoo.com.
Well, go ahead.
International_ is like a dash, but it's lowered down. It's like a line on a line. international_forecaster@yahoo.com.
And, of course, I have read the International Forecaster for some years, and it's a fascinating thing. I read that. I read what Joel Skousen writes every week when they come in. You know, we read about 6 newspapers a day, and I don't know how many magazine articles, but I always look forward to what Bob has to say, because it is a tremendous overview of not only finances, but what's happening politically in our country, what's happening in Iraq, what's happening in Washington, D.C., just a great source of information. And then certainly Bob's suggestions long ago to short General Motors and Ford, the people who have taken that have done very, very well. His suggestion, of course, right now is that the gold stocks are very low in price, and they're probably going to be moving up, and I think he's absolutely right. But let's go right now to Ed, who's calling. Oh, no, we've got Ed still on the line. Ed, are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Hi, Dr. Stan. I was wondering, can I get Bob's feedback as to what he thinks about split income annuities?
What kind of annuity?
Split income annuities.
What is a split income annuity?
I'm asking.
I am not up to date on that particular type of annuity.
But I think, Ed, with any annuity, you're going to get paid. You're going to put in dollars. You're going to get out dollars. Isn't that it?
Correct. All right. Well, they're safe, quote unquote.
Well, I'll tell you what they can do with annuities. Each state, for the most part, has rules that say that if insurance companies cannot deliver the certain percentage which they've guaranteed on annuities, which might be 4, 4.5, 5%, 5.5%, whatever it is, that the law can be changed so that those annuity returns can be adjusted rather than allow the insurance company to go under. Like if the stock market goes down and the bond market goes down, where most of those assets are, then they have a break from that. And so that should be kept in mind. And there could be, and probably will be, insurance companies that will go under. And as time goes on, if that situation persists, then other insurance companies are not going to be able to combine those losses and be able to absorb them. And so there could be failures in all kinds of insurance products.
And don't you think, though, Bob, that, you know, if the we get into an inflationary spiral, you may get paid back in dollars from your annuities, but they won't necessarily be worth very much.
Absolutely.
Anything else, Ed?
Thank you, guys.
Okay, bye-bye. Let's go to Ed, who's calling from Post Falls, Idaho. Another Ed. Hi, Ed. How you doing?
Great. And yourself, Dr. Stan?
Doing fine.
Okay, I have a question for Bob. Bob, you touched on the real estate market in New York, but what about other hot markets like Las Vegas and whatnot?
Las Vegas has topped out. The inventory is increasing, as it is all over the country, and prices in some areas have come down. There's more speculation probably in Las Vegas and L.A. and Miami than any place else. And instead of being the national average of about 23% of all homes sold or speculative endeavors, it's probably somewhere around 35 or 40 in those areas. And so the prices are coming down slightly in all three areas, but they haven't gotten really underway yet.
There are areas that haven't got underway,
and I mentioned them earlier.
I think it's very interesting that in Las Vegas they're putting up these massive towers that were going to have condominiums, and Donald Trump is building condominiums, and his ex-wife is building condominiums. You go there and you can buy a condominium or a timeshare condominium, and people are going there and paying fabulous sums of money for those, you know, condominiums with a beautiful view of the strip and all. But I got an uneasy feeling that those prices are going to come down one of these days too. What do you think, Bob?
Oh, absolutely, and I think this time Vegas is going to get hit really, really hard. And, you know, the larger Vegas gets, the more it pulls upon the natural resources of that area. And one of the resources that is very vital to Las Vegas is water. And they're going to start to have water problems there, big time. And one of the reasons is the open pit mining that goes on to the north where, you know, the aquifers are, and or one of the larger aquifers. And it's been known for many years that they have penetrated these aquifers, and in fact the water that comes out of them, they try to treat it and use it, but there's an awful lot lost just by evaporation alone. And that's going to become a major problem.
Okay, anything else, Ed?
That's about it.
All right, fine. Thanks very much. And certainly there's been a great run and up in the prices in Las Vegas. People have made fabulous fortunes. But the thing is, it's just going too fast now. It can't maintain that indefinitely. At least I certainly agree with Bob that we're in for some very difficult times as far as real estate is concerned. And I think we only have to look and see what's happened in Japan. How much did the price of property go down in Japan there about 1990?
Since 90, I think the figure is 73%. And it's never recovered. And they're trying to say that a recovery is going on now, and they're wrong. It's just more smoke and mirrors. And they get overextended like we did, but they didn't have the exotic loans that we have. And so, you know, if Japan come down 73%, all of the hot areas in America can come down at least 40%, and maybe that much. That's possible. You know, the last correction we had in the United States, California, which was the hot market, in fact, in the International Forecaster, we got everybody out of real estate in October of 1988. Just before the bubble burst. In fact, I sold my own home in Malibu and could have bought it back 55% cheaper 4 years later, which I didn't, but that's how much it went down. And I think the same thing will happen this time in all the 30 hot areas. They will all come down 40% or more. And a good figure probably will be in those areas, 55 to 60%. And that's going to be absolutely devastating to the borrower, homeowner, and also to the economy. So, you know, those who think that it can't and won't happen are sadly mistaken.
And, of course, one thing is I think that an awful lot of the lenders are going to be in real trouble. These people are buying the mortgage bonds, or certainly aren't some of those mortgage bonds actually covered by derivatives?
Yes, they are, and most of the mortgage bonds are being purchased in ABS and CDS form, and what they do is they put a package together, and the packages vary. Some have a total mixture. Some are high grade. Some are low grade.
You're talking about high grade loans or low grade loans?
All kinds of different packages. And it's easy to sell the high grades, even though the yield is lower. But the second group is a little bit harder to sell, which is the middle risk mortgages that are packaged. And then the lower, they can't find anybody to buy them, and the banks are getting stuck with them. And the Fed is very concerned about it. Well, they should be. And that situation is going to get much worse. They have been selling all of those to investors throughout the world. And most of those packaged ABSs and CBDOs and all those things, they have been sold to foreigners because foreigners are reaching for yield. And one of the things I have enunciated in the International Forecaster and previous writings back into the 1980s is you never, ever, ever, ever chase a yield. You go for quality. And you go to the currency or the investment that has the lowest yield because it's the safest.
And what you're really talking about is, of course, you buy these packaged loans and maybe you're going to get 6% on them, but what happens, of course, when the value of the collateral plummets and goes down to 50%? You could end up losing half of the money you put into it.
Well, you lose unless you hold a maturity, and then if you have inflation, if you're holding to maturity and the inflation takes 20 or 30% off the value of whatever instrument you have, say over a 5 or 10 year period, you're a great loser. In fact, Frank from PIC used to say, bonds are certificates of guaranteed confiscation because governments and their central banks continue to deliberately demean currency in order to keep their systems going under Keynesian economics.
Well, now, of course, what do you think is going to happen as far as GM and Ford? They certainly seem to be having ever more problems. GM's talking about laying off 30,000 workers. Ford's talking about laying off a similar number. Apparently, they're having real difficulties to moving their vehicles. We see, you know, some of the discounts, $3,000, $4,000, $6,000, $7,000 off if you get a SBU or if you get a truck. You know, you can't be making an awful lot of profit if you're really slashing the prices that far.
Well, they dug their own grave, just like Mercedes did back in the early 90s by starting to lease. They destroyed the aftermarket value of their vehicles, which had been very, very strong. And what they did here in America was sell sell automobiles and small trucks. With very, very little profit for the corporation. And they did that to keep the assembly lines going until those behind the scenes were ready to pull the plug on our economy. And a key to that plug pulling has been the saturation of the vehicle markets and the inability to sell more units. Now the unit sales are dropping. But you, with Ford and General Motors, you have to go back to 1980 when they started to build production facilities and plan for the transference of their businesses to China and India. And that's when this began. The factory started to be built and so on and so forth. And they have done this deliberately. And all those 60,000 jobs we're talking about, they're already set up in India and Japan. That's where all the good jobs are going. And they expect to come back and sell these vehicles to American citizens. Well, I don't think that's going to work. And the reason why is that all these people are going to be out of work. They're not going to be buying anything. And so, I think, you know, in the chess game, you have to look ahead. And they didn't look ahead as far as profit's concerned. So then you have to look for an alternative reason. And that reason, of course, is the destruction of the American economy. Hello?
This is interesting to see as we're beginning to outsource legal jobs. And you could actually get your legal research done over in India. They're outsourcing architectural jobs over there, in addition to so many of the other jobs that, you know, that they're outsourcing to India. And so often, you know, now I'll talk to some person, you know, I'll just call my local phone company or something like that, and I'll get somebody that I know that they're over in New Delhi or Calcutta, someplace like that. But, you really can't tell where they are. They're just talking to you on the phone. But they're using increasing numbers of people, you know, for our phone services. I saw where one of these, Southern Bell or something like that, was cutting back from 110,000 jobs to 63,000 jobs.
Yeah, they all went to India.
Right.
And yeah, and how you befuddle those people is don't speak to them in English. Speak to them another language, and that ends that real fast.
Well, of course, they're just doing the job. I hold no malice for them. It's not their fault. They're just as you and I. They're victims of a system. There's a massive plan to impoverish our people, and the average American has no idea what's happening. He honestly
don't want to know.
Well, our job is to reach as many people as we can, and I figure the ones that the Lord wants us to reach, we're going to reach, and the ones He doesn't want us to reach, well, that's their problem. But we're to be the watchman on the wall, sounding the warning, because we're in for some very, very serious financial problems in this country, and certainly, how long do you think it's going to take before we really begin to see the dramatic drop in the stock market, the dramatic increase in the price of gold and silver?
Well, I think both have finally begun, and I think that the market is telling us here toward the end of the year, it finished with a negative flourish today, and it tried again to break out cleanly over its former high and really didn't do so. The Fed and the Plunge Protection Team, which is the working group in financial markets, which manipulates all of our markets here today, they are unable to make the Dow, let's take the Dow, or any of the other major averages hit new highs. So I think the game is now finally on. they have done something that's never been done in the history of American finance, and that is keep the stock market up for 2.5 years, essentially on hot air and printing money. And so I think the day of reckoning is here for the market. I think interest rates are going to go somewhat higher. And I also believe that we're going to see much higher gold and silver prices.
Well, why are they discontinuing letting the people know what is happening to M3? They're going to start that in mid-March. Why are they doing that?
Well, so they can hide what they're doing as far as creating more dollars and more credit. But there will be ways to find out, and we will find out what they're doing, although there'll be a time lag.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to see.
What they're doing is totally evil. It's never been done before.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment or two to wrap up this evening's program with Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Bob Chapman, and certainly Bob points out in the latest International Forecaster that not only are they going to stop telling the American people what they're doing in the way of creating money, and that is a figure known as M3, which has been published ever since I can remember, and probably for, you know, the better part of a century, I guess, going back maybe when the Federal Reserve came along, but certainly they've always let us know what they were doing as far as these currency is concerned. That's going to stop, and it seems to be almost time to correspond with something that's going to happen over in Iran. Is Iran is going to open up its own oil market, and supposedly going to begin selling its oil not in dollars as traditionally has been, but in euros. Is there any connection between those two issues?
Well, there certainly is, and I wrote about this when I predicted the war in Iraq, the second Iraq war. And I said it's going to be about geopolitical positioning. It's going to be about oil and stealing the oil, which essentially is what they've done. And they wanted to stop Saddam Hussein, who for 2 years had been selling oil in euros. And now Iran's come and said they're going to do the same thing. And that's why the elitists are so anxious to invade Iran. And that may have been, at least for the time being, stopped because, number one, the Russians have delivered Iran surface-to-air missiles, which are the latest type, which can take down foreign invading planes. And they also have now guaranteed officially that what they will do is they will process the uranium that is produced by Iran so that it will only be brought up to a level of commercial grade for commercial usage, and it will not be available to be used in weapons grade technology. And so if Iran accepts that, that will neutralize that reason for going in there. And I think the weak point here, it could allow these warmongers in Washington to move forward, is they would go after Syria. And they have a pact with Iran, so if they attack Syria, it's tantamount to attacking Iran. And so that would bring in Iran into a conflict. But I don't know who they're going to send to do this, because we have our troops tied up in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Hey,
we don't have any more.
We're out of time, Bob. But God bless you. Thanks so much. We'll look forward to having you on again real soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Bob Chapman. He's been very insightful, and of course he believes, as I do, that they are planning on invading Syria. If you watch television, if you listen to the radio, if you read your newspapers and magazines, understand that they are molding your mind, they are shaping your tastes, they're forming your ideas, And they are preparing the American people for war with Syria. So Bob was saying he doesn't know where the troops are going to come from. I don't know either. Perhaps it'll be primarily an air war. But they are not going to pull our troops out of the Middle East. They may move a few of them out of Iraq, but we have a long-term plan, and that is to bring democracy to all of the countries of the Middle East. And of course, by democracy, I mean governments that they can control, governments that will go along with a new agenda, the New World Order, the New World Religion, and of course, the whole thrust of the New World Order is the destruction of the sovereignty of the individual states, the destruction of freedom here in America. But why shouldn't that happen? America's turned its back on God. We've embraced pornography. We've embraced immorality. We've taken God and prayer out of our schools. Why should we be surprised if God would withdraw his blessing from this country? So our plea to you is begin to understand what's going on, and we hope that many of you will get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, that you'll certainly go to our webpage at www.radioliberty.com, and you can listen to our programs there 5 hours a day on the Internet. You can get our shortwave frequencies. You can now hear us 9 hours a day on Telstar 5 if you're interested in getting a satellite a receiver, and of course lots of other things up there on Telstar 5, but certainly my program and Joyce Riley, Chuck Christmeyer, Pastor Butch Palm, people I'm proud to be affiliated with will be up on Telstar 5 with us. What we're trying to do is provide the information you need to survive in the very difficult times that lie ahead, because behind everything that's happening from a geopolitical point of view is a spiritual battle. That it's being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. We do hope that if you'd like to get a free copy of one of our newsletters, you don't have access to the Internet, because all the newsletters are up there and you can just pull them down gratis, but certainly if you'd like to get a free copy of our latest newsletter, Deja Vu in Iraq, which is certainly the beginning of my analysis of what's really going on in Iraq today. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, they're lying to you. There really were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. He moved them into Syria, and they're there, and they're going to find them one of these days. But remember, you heard it here first. And then, of course, let me offer you a newsletter. It's called Peak Oil, too, if you really want to understand why the price of oil and gasoline and heating oil and electricity and natural gas are going up. You really want to read our Peak Oil 2 newsletter. We'll be glad to send that one to you, either one of the two. Of course, we hope you'll perhaps want to become a supporter of Radio Liberty and help us as we reach out across America with the news behind the news, the story for behind the story. Our number 1-800-544-8927, our website radioliberty.com. Please pray for America, but pray for Radio Liberty for our provision and our protection. Till we're together again. May the Lord be with you. Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, but please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Dr. Igor Safid, who's been our guest before. He actually came from Russia. He was trained there. He was in the military, trained in biological and nuclear and chemical warfare and how to avoid it. And eventually he became a Christian, came to the United States, and he lives over somewhere in Nevada. He actually travels around the country teaching people about how to be prepared, what to do if we should have a major natural calamity. Now, the average American really doesn't like to think about that sort of thing. We want to really be concerned about important things like who's going to be in the Super Bowl, who's going to get the Oscar or the Golden Globe Award, or you know, of course, the latest crisis that's created by the media, the latest scandal. But, of course, the really serious things, the possibility that America could be facing serious problems and serious crises. Most people don't want to think about that. And yet I think that you have to think about it. I've certainly traveled in Europe. I was stationed there as a battalion surgeon after the Second World War, 1953, 1954, 55. I was stationed in Mainz and Frankfurt. I saw the devastation of the war. I saw the haunted look on the faces of the people there. And if you think that it couldn't happen here, why, you're certainly, I think, very, very foolish. We have no defense at all here for chemical, nuclear, biological warfare. And if the people who are going to survive are going to be the ones who make preparations on their own. Dr. Safid, thank you so very much for being with us this evening.
Yes, thank you, Stan. It is a pleasure talking with you again.
Well, let's see. Of course, you're actually spending a fair amount of time getting people educated.
Yes, I am.
All right, fine. Well, what sort of response are you getting from the audiences, and where do the audiences come from? Are they government employees? Are they local, certainly emergency room workers, or what?
Mostly from every possible layer of life, and most, of course, first responders, hazmat technicians, many from hospital, managerial professions, and sometimes physicians, unfortunately sometimes, I need to admit. And, of course, EMT, EMS, paramedics, this type of workers who will be at the scene in the first time when some type of incident occur.
Well, of course, certainly over in Russia, they spent a lot of time in preparation for this sort of warfare, didn't they?
Yes, plenty of time, and they did spend great amount of money and great amount of time in preparation.
Oh, I know. Do you see anything comparable here in America at this time to the emphasis that they placed on the danger of chemical, biological, or nuclear warfare here in the United States? In other words, is there a real awareness, or is this something that is really sort of a minor side issue?
Well, after September 11, things so far reasonably all right, and I think United States population slowly slide back, and they just going back to the same sleeping mode, sleeping condition, because so far nothing serious happened in United States territory, and I personally believe this is a very kind of a dangerous position, because usually it takes time to develop things, and it takes time to orchestrate.
Hold that thought right there. We're going to be back with Dr. Safid in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Okay, fine. Well, you were just saying you think it's sort of a dangerous situation, that that it takes time to get organized, to be prepared, and that there does not seem to be even sort of a feeling of urgency that we really should be prepared. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, it is. And, of course, I know government spending a lot of money in different directions, and new Department of Homeland Security involved in many different ways, but I think mostly people not recognize what exactly need to be done, because they just simply does not have a background, right background, and just even understanding on what need to be done.
All right, well, what does need to be done? If you were in charge, do you work for the FEMA, Office of Homeland Security, or who is it that actually sponsors you when you go around talking?
Oh, yes, we work for Office for Domestic Preparedness Programs, okay. And it's a part of Department of Homeland Security office, and we sponsor financially our organization by federal government. And, of course, if I had opportunity to do something, I might, first of all, try to change the mind of people. And a second, a lot of infrastructure need to be changed, because infrastructure, like hospitals, for example, they simply built for a business, not for a civil defense. And that's one of the biggest tasks I think nobody facing yet, and nobody even understand yet.
Now, what do you mean by how would you change our hospitals so that they'd be prepared for civil defense?
Probably start with emergency rooms, because that's the first entrance to the hospital, and all contamination and all highly contagious victims will end up inside the first floor of the hospital. Secondly, I probably spend much time on creating or rebuilding large facilities close by the hospitals, like warehouses for a large casualty collection, isolational wards, which can be nicely used after, let's say, biological events, and can collect mass number of highly contagious patients. So they don't need to go inside the hospitals, but the physicians and nurses and every support personnel can come with necessary equipment and do the right job, but not inside the expensive large facilities.
And, of course, if they come in, you get the infected people into the large facilities, you take a chance on spreading the infection. Would that be a fair statement?
Absolutely, and that's one of the biggest fears of hospitals today. That's why they're not willingly to want to accept...
Hold that thought right there.
Yes, sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Dr. Iker Shafid, and he spent a lot of time, thinking about the possibility of the unthinkable happening here in America, because he was trained in this. He was a military officer with the Soviet military before he married a Christian woman and came to the United States and became a Christian himself, and sort of changed his whole perspective. But I think he shares the concern that we have. And one reason I wanted to have him on, because he thinks about these sort of things. He understands the implications of it. And you have to have a whole different framework of thought. I mean, if you don't prepare for these difficult times, then, of course, you're going to have tremendous casualties. You would have tremendous casualties anyway, but you could cut that number dramatically if the preparations were there. So Dr. Shafid is saying that he thinks there should be facilities close by every major hospital where you could take the casualties, but not put them into the hospitals, because, of course, if they had an infectious disease, they would spread that infectious disease. And you need an ability to triage. You need the medical facilities available. You need the medical personnel. But you really want to bring them people with a deadly disease into the hospital where they could spread it to others. So pick up your thoughts there, Dr. Shafid.
Yes, well, another problem about bringing people inside the hospitals, it means for the hospitals, for the patients who are staying at the hospitals for another reason, it means immediate evacuation. So what's happened with the whole facility? First is a complete evacuation of all other departments, and only after they start selectively bring mass number of highly contagious victims. And I don't believe managers of the hospitals or CEO willingly to do that. it means large financial losses and large lawsuits in the future.
And of course, at one time, why we had 400 or 500 major portable field units to be used for civil defense, and, but that was, of course, 50 years ago. And then there was a plan program to convince the American people that any sort of a major war was unthinkable. So we had something called mutual assured destruction, with the idea that if there was a war with Russia, why, they would kill us and we would kill them, and therefore, you know, why we had nothing to worry about. And, of course, I remember Ronald Reagan, President Reagan, saying that was an immoral concept. What we ought to do is try to figure out if there was a war, why, how we could save our people. Now, certainly the Russians were always concerned about saving their people. They didn't believe in mutual assured destruction, and they developed an anti-ballistic missile system. They developed an extensive civil defense system. Here in America, our leaders accepted the concept not of mutual assured destruction, but just of assured destruction. We have no anti-ballistic missile system that works. We have nothing effectively to protect our people other than a few people working, as Dr. Shafid is, trying to educate the people. Certainly, Russia really did have an extensive civil defense system, didn't they?
Yes, they have. They built a very intense system through the decades of Cold War. And I believe they start this preparation after Hiroshima and Nagasaki nuclear attacks on Japan. And after that, Russia decided seriously involved in civil defense programs. And I believe they spend about $2 trillion total on civil defense in general. I'm guessing, but it's I know it's over $1 trillion for sure.
Are they talking about a trillion?
Yes, it's a trillion, not a billion.
Right.
It is a trillion, yes.
And that's an awful lot of money for a country that's not very wealthy, but they really wanted to save their people. Here in America, our leaders had a different agenda. Well, do you have any idea what's going on in Russia today? Have they maintained their civil defense system and alert?
I believe today, financially, they're in a very difficult situation for over a decade, and the civil defense system definitely going down, and mostly they start concentrate their attention on Western style life and make money more than protect the country. And I do know that they're still very seriously involved in anti-missile defense, and they still developing today new intercontinental ballistic missiles, mostly against the United States. And when people tell me that Cold War is over, well, I say usually it's not Cold War anymore. It's, you can call this a warm war if you like, but it's still in progress and still in research, and they're still spending a lot of money into rocket strategic force of Russian Federation. But civil defense right now quite weak.
All right, of course, they've just deployed a number of new Tupol missiles, the new mobile intercontinental ballistic missiles, but we're not doing anything like that. We're unilaterally disarming. They're going ahead and arming. Much of what's going on in the world, if you look at things logically, they just don't make sense. If you're looking at them from perhaps the point of view that we stress, the spiritual point of view, then everything makes sense. So, well, let's get back to certainly your programs and what you're teaching people to do. And certainly you're suggesting that they get more in the way of planning and what would you do with all these casualties and where would they be taken care of? And is there any place, are there any facilities where there could be tent cities or tent facilities set up adjacent to major hospitals and the parking lots, things like that?
Well, I know a few organizations in Arizona and other states like New Mexico. They start involved metropolitan medical teams they developed, and they have more abilities to support, at least initially support, first wave of casualties. But I also know that hospital systems itself so far not involved in enough on this type of events and this preparation. Military, of course, they have a different, like a NASH type of facilities where they can do, field surgery and mass decontamination and mass station of highly contagious victims. But most cases, they're just simply not applicable for the civil large city downtown areas, and this is why I believe, because the big cities are the big targets, they still, hospital systems are still very, very weak and unprepared, including New York.
Well, certainly that would be a prime target if there were to be a strike on the United States. Well, what are your thoughts about the bird flu? Do you think this is really a major factor or something we should really be concerned about? Do you think there's been a lot of hype in this? Perhaps to focus our attention on that, where we're not focusing our attention on other very real threats.
Well, speaking of bird flu, I know many locations in Russia already affected by bird flu, and many birds died left and right, and large cities even, like not far from Moscow, city Rezhan, for example, thousands of birds dying. But I don't see any panic from population. I don't know, maybe from, because they just don't care, don't concern. But I do know that at least Russian medical system already developed and start implementing bird flu vaccine, and that just happened recently, about 2-3 weeks ago.
Well, certainly the we have a pandemic of bird flu, but it's primarily among birds. It has not, and I hope it never does, mutate to the point where it can, you know, spread readily from human to human to human. That would be the real fear we have.
Yes, it will be a real devastation, and they are comparing this with Spanish flu in 1917-1918. I think about 20 million died from that flu. But so far, mutation has not occurred, and I do know that many large pharmaceutical companies already make billions of dollars based on the fear factor more than on anything else. And in the United States.
And, of course, one of those, one of the beneficiaries of that is a man named Donald Rumsfeld, who just happened to be the CEO of the company that just happened to develop Tamiflu, you know, of course, when he was the CEO, and he still has a great deal of stock. So, certainly, Donald Rumsfeld is, well, maybe nobody else is going to benefit from what's going on, but Donald Rumsfeld will, as well as George Shultz and a few other people who have stock in this company. So, whether this is a real threat, or whether or not, I don't know. Well, I am concerned to know that they have reconstituted the virus that produced the 1918 flu, or they went up to Alaska, and they went up to either Norway, I think it was Norway, and they actually dug up the bodies in several places, and they were able to get samples of the virus, and they reconstituted the virus, and they keep it in safe laboratories, but now they're shipping it around the country through regular mail service, so various labs can get hold of this virus. And why you would do that with the deadliest virus we've ever had, I'm not quite certain.
Yes, this is a good question. And actually, a few locations, small villages in Siberia, still contain the corpses of the people of still in a frozen position, of course, conditioned with Spanish flu as well. So I don't know if Russian health system did some type of research with their fluid, but I do know that they already developed vaccine against at least this type of bird flu, what they have right now. So,
and of course, they're going to use that to vaccinate the birds, or they're
gonna... not the people. Uh-huh. Yes, because they still not get vaccine. I mean, it's not mutated far enough. to make a danger for people.
And I think it's very interesting that in China today, they're talking about vaccinating 1 billion birds. Of course, they got a lot of people there, and they got 1 billion people. I guess every one of them has a bird or represented. So they're talking about actually vaccinating 1 billion birds in China to try to stop the spread of this lethal disease, but it's still primarily in birds. And don't let them confuse you when they talk about the pandemic of bird flu. It is a pandemic, but it's a pandemic in birds, not in human beings. Well, do you see any other type of disease that certainly could have a devastating effect on our society?
Well, the previous Nile virus was quite intense in the United States and different locations, but I think mostly right now, most concentration of society clearly on the bird flu right now, so we'll see what's happened in the future. But seems like lately a lot of viruses start mutating, and I always have a question very large on that subject. Because some organizations researching biological weapons, and that's exactly what they do, and they just playing with the genes and viruses. And that's a possibility also.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment, Dr. Shafir. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Shafir was just commenting that he's concerned about these new diseases that are occurring, and certainly the fact that there are companies that actually have the ability to genetically modify disease. And the question arises, would anybody genetically modify a disease and make it more lethal and possibly contaminate large segments of our society? Well, let's get on to, of course, the danger of a nuclear attack. Do you think that this is a realistic thing in this day and age? And certainly we seem to be moving towards conflict with Iran, which I'm convinced has at least a few nuclear weapons and would be able to lob a few onto this country, you know, from passing ships or submarines or something of that sort. If we were to launch an attack on them, I would think they would be just crazy enough to retaliate by launching an attack on America. Do you think that's a possibility?
Well, Iran is a well-known enemy of the United States for a long time and well-known friend of Soviet and now Russian Federation as well. They always was close relation, and Russian Federation as a country who gave them plenty